Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's June the 21st, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with independent market analyst Dan Zwicker of Bloomington, Illinois. And we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In agricultural news, the Senate has rejected a proposal that would have ended the 54-cent a gallon tax on imported ethanol. The full House is not expected to take up the farm bill until at least mid to late July. And in that same body, the subcommittees have added $13 billion with a B dollars to the legislation without deciding how to pay for it. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us on this Thursday afternoon during the Closing Market Report to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Stay with us.
Did you miss the Closing Market Report or some of our other agricultural programming? We've got the answer. You can get all our AM 580 agricultural shows delivered daily directly to your computer. Just go to our website, WILOAG.org, and look for the headline, subscribe to AM 580 Ag Podcast. Follow the simple steps, and you'll never miss an ag broadcast again. From the pre-opening and opening ag reports to the closing market report to Commodity Week, all delivered to your computer when you need it. Head on over to WILOAG.org and put the AM 580 Agricultural Podcasts to work for you.
On this Thursday afternoon, futures at the Chicago Board of Trade finished like this. July wheat up a penny at 6.06. September's at 6.22. We're up 6 cents. And December contract at $6.28, up 4.5 cents. July corn futures at 3.85. We're down 9.25. September's at 3.94.75, down 9.5. And December futures at 3.99, down 7.25 for the day. July soybean futures down 20.5 cents at 8.18.5. August futures at 8.26. We're down 21.75, and November beans down 22.75 at $8.51.75. Bean meal futures July at $2.26.20. They were down $7. July bean oil at 35 cents, 0.04. We're down 0.27 for the afternoon. From the Mercantile Exchange, August feeder cattle unchanged today. June live cattle at $87.97.5. We're down 77.5 cents. And the August futures were down 57.5 at 89.92.5. Lean hog futures at $74.80 a hundredweight were up 7.5 cents on the day. And the outside markets, crude oil trading at $68.60, now down 26 cents for the contract August, and the CRB index at 316.14 is down 1.5 for the day. Dow Jones Industrial Average at 13,511 is up just about 22 points for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us on this Thursday afternoon to take a look at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is independent market analyst Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor. The independent market analyst Dan Zwicker. Hi, Dan. Good afternoon.
Hi, Todd.
Well, let's take a look at the numbers to begin with. I want to talk just a bit about the way the pit trade has changed over time, if we could, because it's kind of important when we get to technical trading days from time to time. And so in the lead option harvest month, if we look at pit trade today only, we do not have a technical trade like we do in the composite trade, which includes the overnight session and the electronic trade for the day. And we have an outside down day there. So you might talk a little bit about the two differences and what it all means, if you could, please.
Well, I don't know if there's I watch both sets of charts. I watch the I keep track of electronic set, and then I keep track of a regular session, which is the 9:30 to 1:15. I think probably the electronic is maybe a little bit more important nowadays because most of the volume is starting to go through there or has gone through there now. It seems to be the leader. If you watch it tick by tick during the regular session, the electronic trade kind of sets the tone. If you start seeing a couple upticks in electronic, then the auction cry follows. So the electronic, I guess this is the day and age of e-trading or e-electronic. So electronic seems to be I think, a little bit more important. So I watch that or I weight it. But you just kind of, I think, got to take each individual case and situation. But, yes, we've got some bearish technical action, especially corn and soybeans. I'm kind of looking at the weekly chart where we were higher there Sunday night in the overnight trade. We kind of even went higher a little bit Monday on the regular session trade, but then we quickly kind of gave up those advances. In corn's case, closed down with a weekly reversal down or a daily down. Beans, I think, hung in there maybe 2 or 3 cents high, but they were on the session lows. And then we saw some strong follow-through weakness there developed there on Tuesday, and Wednesday here was more of a recovery day, and now we followed through to the downside again today. So technically, we've got some weekly reversal downs being traced out on both corn and soybean charts. The wheat chart with today's advances doesn't look bad yet. But if corn and soybeans are going to fall apart, it probably will spill over into wheat. But chart action, raw price action on the weekly basis is fairly negative corn and soybean prices, at least for now.
And does this all work into your cycle analysis as well?
It does. This, you know, I think we talked a little bit last week that we had been up like 7 weeks last week. Mm-hmm. This was kind of like 8 weeks. There's some key technical numbers here. Monday night, I know when I was watching the trade, we hit some key technical points, and that's all we got out of it, and then the market turned down. So I do think that we're now in a period of consolidation and correction, and is probably take a wait-and-see attitude to see what next week's stocks report is. But probably more important is how much rain we actually get. I mean, we are in one of the so-called weather markets. We are always in a weather market. It's just that we were in a weather market that was being influenced by dry weather and crop-reducing potential weather. Now that's switching over to maybe a little more adequate rain type situation. But I think short term, it wouldn't surprise me to see the market maybe put in a short term low or so here over the next couple days. We've been down here 3 days. Tomorrow would maybe be fourth day. Monday maybe be 5 days down. So after you have a pretty steep setback, a lot of times the market will consolidate. And that might be the case, especially early next week. We'll probably have a rain pattern where it was beneficial in some areas but not beneficial in other areas, and then the trade will probably just take a breather, and we'll see what next Friday's report says.
And that was my next question. Of course, it all leads into maybe a consolidation pattern, which would be fairly normal the week prior to especially a report like this one coming up, where it seems to be fairly important. You got any expectations from that report on acreage for corn, soybeans, or wheat?
Well, my expectations, I guess, is that it's always been my observation that when the spring weather pattern would allow producers to plant, and I know we had some early interruptions with wet weather there in late April and early May, but then the market, the weather pattern switched to a drier pattern. So everybody had their opportunity to pretty well plant what they wanted to plant in a particular field. So I guess my guess is when you have that type of situation, farmers have a tendency to like corn. It's hard to turn that corn planter off if it's rolling. So I guess my expectations would be, we would maybe see more corn acres possibly in that report, and maybe a little bit less bean acres, just based upon the weather pattern that we had basically the last 3 weeks or so in May.
Well, crystal ball things for me just a bit. Suggest that we have, as the first model run is, and they're not very reliable, but one of the model runs is suggesting there may be rain by next Tuesday. That could be pretty good across the southern part of Illinois and in through the southeast and parts of Indiana, and that we do end up with a larger figure for acreage for corn. Where do we go in terms of price?
Well, a lot of that depends still. July weather pattern is still going to be key. Now, you know, if we do happen to have a larger acres, now the key is it a half a million or a million or you know, 2 million. And I don't think anybody has an idea when you drive across the Corn Belt. I mean, we've had such a big jump. I mean, anybody that's driven the Corn Belt knows that we've planted a lot of corn. But, you know, we went from 78 to, you know, USDA says 90 and a half. You can't tell the difference, I don't think, between 90 or 91 or 92. That's all within the margin of error. But there was a lot of people planted corn. There's just no doubt about it. And that's been the key reason why these soybeans have kept on going. They kept climbing higher, even with the big 600 million bushel carryout that we have this current year. And then, of course, the dry weather then began to fuel those worries with less acres, maybe lower yield. And then the concern about areas of, you know, double crop bean acres. If you don't get some good rains into the soft red winter wheat areas, you may not have as large a double crop acre. So the market constantly worries about acreage mixes, how high prices now may impact acreage decisions this fall or how it may not. It just looks to me like when we're in an expanding demand market like what we are, the market is going to constantly worry about acres meeting those demands, whether or not we're going to plant those acres to meet demand. And I think that'll provide some underlying fundamental support to the market, even if we did put in some short-term highs in this thing, and you know, we settle back, and we'll have to see what happens on the weather pattern.
More and more frequent opportunities to market, then.
I think so. I think we're just in one of these periods, like kind of when I got started, where we had a lot of ups and downs in it. Whereas, you know, we're what we were used to there in the late '90s and the first couple years of the double O's is just, you know, kind of a deflationary type attitude in the marketplace. We always had a large supply around. There was no worry about shortages because we weren't in an expanding demand area. Now, since we're in an expanding demand area worldwide, and weather patterns aren't quite as perfect as what they were in the late '90s, the market is worrying about supply-demand balances and you know, how that may or may impact distant supply-demand balances.
Dan, it's always good to talk to you.
Thank you, Todd.
Dan Zwicker is an independent market analyst, joins us from Bloomington on Thursday afternoons. At the bottom of the hour, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather with meteorologist Pete Levitt. Mike Sola says tonight across the two-state region in the north, it'll be cloudy, some showers and thunderstorms in central sections. Increasing cloudiness with showers and thunderstorms arriving there as well. Tomorrow, partly to mostly cloudy, some scattered showers and thunderstorms. Highs tomorrow from 76 in northern Illinois to 90 in the far south. The extended forest forecast calls for a series of disturbances that could continue to bring rain into the region into the weekend. And then a tropical storm system that could impact the weather for the final days of June. The storm, which computer models placed near the Texas-Louisiana border on next Tuesday, could bring more precipitation to the southern half of the area for much of next week. But Mike says it's kind of like saying the Cubs had a winning streak early in the season. We'll have to wait and see how that one pans out.
In agricultural news, the Senate yesterday rejected an amendment that would have ended a 54-cent-a-gallon tariff on imported ethanol. New Hampshire Republican Judd Gregg's proposal was defeated 56-36. The Senate yesterday also voted down an attempt to block big oil companies from benefiting from a $1 per gallon federal alternative fuel tax credit. The Senate narrowly rejected the amendment by a 49-45 vote. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson says full markup and floor debate of Farm Bill 2007 will be delayed until at least mid-July. Peterson says House leadership decided to move markup to mid-July and floor debate to the last week of July to allow time to consider other appropriation bills. Meanwhile, House subcommittees have finished markup of Farm Bill 2007, and they have approved $13 billion in new Farm Bill spending without saying how to pay for it. Additional dollars were earmarked for biofuels, land stewardship, and nutrition programs. An Internal Revenue Service analysis of farm income showed that from 1998 to 2004, two producers reported income losses for every producer who turned a profit. The IRS conducted the study on Schedule F, the form on which self-employed producers report profit or loss from farming operations. The report showed the average adjusted gross income for a Schedule F household was $70,305 in 2004, but the figure was skewed by the top 42% of farm income households. More than a million producers had adjusted gross incomes under $50,000 and averaged about $12,500 in income, which qualified them for low-income tax breaks. The U.S. blocked a WTO investigation of its agricultural subsidies yesterday, delaying action on a Canadian government complaint that the U.S. exceeds the amount it is allowed to pay producers. Canada alleges that the U.S. exceeded in six of the past 8 years the maximum $19.1 billion it is allowed to pay producers under WTO rules. Canada says the U.S. exceeded the maximum by $5 billion a year on average. U.S. trade officials say Canada's findings are unfounded and that some of the complaints refer to measures which have been discontinued. And river freight rates are soaring across the U.S. interior this week as uneven water levels and needed lock repairs disrupt domestic barge movement. Since Friday, tariffs charged for barge rentals have jumped 10 to 55 basis points on the Illinois, Mississippi, and Ohio rivers, the trio of waterways most heavily utilized by commercial tow operators. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Well, up next in today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkus says it is time to saddle up for the 2007 Farm Bill debate.
There's an old saying that folks should stay on the horse that brung them. That's especially true when that horse has been trustworthy, dependable, and worked hard for its rider. With a few minor improvements here and there, maybe a new saddle, bridle, or shoes, that horse has a good many years left in it. As Congress begins to debate farm policy that will guide the nation's producers through the next 6 years or more, I want to offer this. The basic structure of the 2002 Farm Bill is working, and working well, not only for farmers, but for consumers and the environment. In Farm Bureau's opinion, it's not the time to trade horses. Farm Bureau has laid out a comprehensive proposal for the 2007 Farm Bill that benefits all sectors of American agriculture. While taking into account the big challenges facing today's producers, the proposal maintains the basic structure of the 2002 bill, as well as the balance between programs by not shifting funds between each title. It also maintains the three-legged stool of direct payments, marketing loans, and a countercyclical safety net. The proposal continues to support strong conservation funding, but ensures that it doesn't come at the expense of full and adequate funding for commodity programs. Our proposal is fiscally responsible. Multi-year funding for the 2007 Farm Bill could potentially be $57 billion less, which is 50% less than what Congress committed to spend in the current multi-year farm program. Yet, there are still many goals to meet with funding for conservation, nutrition, commodities, and disaster programs. The Farm Bureau proposal meets funding for all these goals by identifying spending cuts for any requested funding increases within a specific title of the bill. While Farm Bureau's proposal has maintained the structure of current farm policy, we have made a few specific recommendations. An important one is the establishment of a standing catastrophic assistance program that does not duplicate the coverage offered by crop insurance. Such a program would be an improvement over the current system of requesting emergency disaster assistance, which is not working as it should and provides highly variable levels of aid. Farm Bureau opposes any changes in payment limitations and means testing. To be a viable commercial farm, we must use economies of scale to justify large capital investment costs associated with farming. By reducing the current adjusted gross income cap of $2.5 million to $200,000 for farm program payment eligibility, as the administration has proposed, there could be serious consequences for producers who actually do most of the farming. The Farm Bureau proposal includes changes to comply with our existing agreement obligations and World Trade Organization litigation rulings, such as last year's reforms of export credit and food aid programs, and elimination of the Step 2 cotton program. Our proposal also includes elimination of the prohibition on planting fruits and vegetables on farm program crop acreage. However, it also maintains U.S. negotiating leverage in the ongoing Doha round by continuing strong domestic support for agriculture until a World Trade Organization agreement is reached that increases foreign market access for U.S. farmers. In all, Farm Bureau's proposal has more than 60 recommendations for the future direction of U.S. farm policy. We may have made a few adjustments here and there to the tack, but we're still riding that trusty horse that brought us. I invite you to take a look at Farm Bureau's proposal by visiting the American Farm Bureau Federation website at www.fb.org. This is Amy Rochkis with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. This is WILL Urbana on a Thursday afternoon. Bill Mayer joins us from Lexington, where he works with Roach Ag Marketing. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
You know, you and I were talking just before we came on a little bit about how they trade out the e-trade sessions now and the pit sessions. And just for a little more explanation, I think probably we need to discuss how those come through, and so that when you give a composite trade, it usually includes the overnight trade and through the close of the day. So the session starts last night and ends today. But the only way to get those numbers to show up on our screens is to actually include them. If we do the pit trade, we only get the cash trade in the pit. Is that right?
Yeah, you only get the 9:30 to 1:15 trade, for example, on corn.
But it's only the open outcry trade.
Only the open outcry. It's actually two separate entities is taking place there. The E-trade is a completely separate animal.
And a lot of times the highs and lows are set in the overnight session, so they need to be included. And you had an interesting figure on the May contract for corn, didn't you?
Yeah, well, actually, for the month of May, the corn volume traded, 73% of it was E-trade, and 27% of it was in the pit. So, and that's gone up, that's nearly doubled since they started last August, when they had, started the side-by-side during the day. So, and it's that way, 63% on the beans and about 70% on the wheat. So the big part of the volume is being traded electronically.
Well, certainly it's fluid, and we'll try to keep on top of that and make sure we give some explanation along the way. What'd you make of the cash grain market for the week?
Well, a little bit better. Corn bases up in this area for the last week. The southwest feeders and southeast feeders continue to be pretty good, maybe a little bit higher. The processors kind of steady to weak, and the river was lower on the corn. And on the beans, there were some better river bids, but that's kind of saying that, it's better, but it's, for example, from 71 under to 60 under for, like, new crop stuff, so... not anything to write home about by any means. Still too many beans out here in the country.
Farmers shaken at all by the trade after Monday's trade this week?
Well, there's some, questions. I think a lot of guys would really like to see the rain before they, make any additional moves, which may be too late. But, if you look at today's trade, we've had a down week, but if you compare it to where we were a week and a half ago, we're probably not a whole lot different. So I think there's still some opportunities to get yourself comfortable here. That's what we've been trying to tell people is, get yourself in a position where you feel comfortable no matter what happens, because we don't know whether it's going to rain or not.
And then what are your bids for the afternoon?
369 on the corn, and that's old and new crop, and 778 on the old beans, 812 on the new.
And we appreciate you being with us.
Thanks, Todd.
And that is Bill Mayer. He's with Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Thursday afternoon. In just about 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Pete Levitt will join us in just a moment. Your regional newscast. Now for your regional newscast, here's Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, Todd. Douglas County Deputy Sheriff Tommy Martin is in stable but critical condition at an Urbana hospital this afternoon after being shot this morning in Villa Grove. With more on the story, we go live to AM 580's Jeff Bossert.
Celeste, just before 10 this morning, state police stopped a car on I-57 north of Tuscola. Officers were about to question the two occupants of this car under suspicion of drug activity. And when that happened, the drivers took off. The suspects then made their way to rural Camargue, where they stole a van from a residence. Douglas County Sheriff's Deputy Tom Martin was able to learn word of where the van was located and located it. And when he tried to stop them, they were shot, and he was shot in the face and torso, and the two suspects fled on I-57. Martin was able to give the van's location to authorities. Authorities then made their way to Villa Grove. The van gave out on them as they were trying to cross a railroad tracks along Route 133. One suspect is in custody, 23-year-old Kareem Martin, address unknown. The other suspect made his way into the bank in Arcola, where we were told a short while ago that there were still two hostages being held. Three had been released. Reporting live in Arcola, I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.
A Champaign County jury has found an Urbana man accused of running a juvenile prostitution ring out of his home guilty. Prosecutors said 46-year-old John Haywood knowingly videotaped a 16-year-old engaging in sex acts with a co-defendant and displayed a gun at that time. Sentencing is set for July 19th. More on this story this afternoon at 4:30 in the 4:30 newscast. Closing arguments continue today in the case against former media baron Conrad Black and other one-time executives at Hollinger International. An attorney representing former Vice President Peter Atkinson today argued that federal prosecutors have not proven that Atkinson intended to defraud the company. Nearly 1 year after the Indiana Bureau of Motor Vehicles installed new computer software, the BMV commissioner says 80% of the problems have been identified and fixed. Ronald Stiver says that most of the rest should be corrected by the end of the year. That's a look at AM 580 news headlines. I'm Celeste Quinn.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to WILL, and we're joined this afternoon to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast by meteorologist Pete Levitt. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, tell me about this first model run that we're looking at that suggests potentially there might be a little more rainfall for those very, very parched areas of the southeast and parts of the eastern Corn Belt maybe by Tuesday to Wednesday of next week.
Oh, I think we'll see it in the western half of the eastern Corn Belt, in other words, Illinois. Prior to that, this weekend, we're going to see some pretty good activity. Some of it may come down as chunks rather than rain, but for the most part, I guess the heavy rain will be more beneficial than the associated hail with some of the more severe storms would be otherwise. There's a system coming down now, or just starting over northwestern Iowa, which is going to track east-southeastward later today and tonight, and that'll come across Illinois tonight, early tomorrow, across the northern third of the state. Most of that activity will be up pretty much to the north of I-74 up in there, and there'll be showers, thunderstorms, and some locally severe storms. And then another one or maybe two more systems following a similar track, each one a little farther south, will come along Friday night and into Saturday, and some of these will produce some locally heavy rains and severe thunderstorms and the like. Once again, I think that people will welcome the rain and hope that they just don't be the ones hit by the locally severe events. Then towards the end of the week, as you end of the five-day period, I should say, as you noted, once the showers get through the eastern Corn Belt on Saturday and Sunday, it looks like we're going back to a brief period of warmer and drier conditions with the temperatures getting up into the 90s again. But I think this rain's going to be quite welcome.
And then if you take a look around the rest of the globe, what do you see?
Well, things are pretty seasonal, and that is to say, you know, we're always looking for problems rather than good weather. But I think we've seen deterioration in wheat crops in the Ukraine because of drought there continues and expands a little bit. That combined with the problems we're having in our own winter wheat belt with excessive moisture, really extraordinary amounts of moisture right up through the middle third of the country from Texas to Canada. All of that is causing declines in conditions here and probably some losses over there as well. In China, it looks like the monsoon is stuck for a while in southern China, which means they get too much rain in the Yangtze Valley and maybe too little rain up in the Yellow River Valley up north towards Manchuria, and that's something which needs to be watched.
We appreciate you being with us for the day.
My pleasure, Todd.
Yeah, Pete Levitt, a meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Thursday afternoon. Don't forget to tune in again tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the agricultural markets on the pre-opening commodity market report with your director of ag programming here at the radio stations, Dave Dickey. I'm Todd Gleason, reminding you to visit our website at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. You have a great afternoon.